Hello, welcome along to this episode of CamFM Trending. This is the podcast where we bring together all the best features, interviews and analysis from Cambridge University and Anglia Ruskin University's student radio station. I'm Aaron, speaking to you on the first day of meteorological summer. And so that's a good time, as ever, to introduce our new series put together by our head of news, Jerry Schmidt, on green issues here in Cambridge. We've called it, as you might have worked out, Green Cambridge. This first episode's all about biodiversity, the use of herbicides, how we manage land here in the city. But Jerry can explain that much better than me. I hope you enjoy the programme.
We've had the sunniest April on record in the UK this year, which on the one hand has been great for those grass-touching study breaks. But on the other hand, the mean temperature over the month has been 1.7 degrees over the long-term average. According to Met Office figures, that makes it the third warmest April since records began in 1884. And anyone who's seen all those iconic Cambridge lawns yellowing at the edges won't be surprised to hear that rainfall over the course of last month also only reached about half of expected volumes across the UK. Over the next few weeks here on CamFM News Brunch, I'm presenting a series of mini-features focusing on different elements of climate change and the destruction of the natural environment, casting a Cambridge eye on a variety of topics. This week we hear from a group who's played a part in a major change to how our public land is being treated in the city.
Very few people actually are aware that Cambridge City Council have gone herbicide free. The visual difference is absolutely staggering.
And later on, I'll be speaking to a student working to improve the green spaces in their college.
It's a complete monoculture of grass that is very hard to maintain.
On CamFM News Brunch, this is the first episode of Green Cambridge. Especially with the recent droughts being another reason for many of Cambridge's lawns to be looking so brown, you'll be forgiven for not knowing that there's been a quiet revolution going on. The debate surrounding the use of chemicals to manage weeds and pests has been going on for decades, but in Cambridge it's a highly current topic. To discuss the recent changes in the City Council's approach to pesticides, I spoke to two people who had a hand in bringing the issue to the fore and shaping the change.
So I'm Julia Shaw, founding member of Pesticide Free Cambridge. I'm also associate professor at UCL, running a project measuring the social impacts of some of the work we're doing as a campaigning group in Cambridge.
Julia set up Pesticide Free Cambridge in 2018, and a short while later was joined by a fellow supporter of the cause.
My name is Ben Gregg. I come at this really from a completely non-professional perspective. It's really more from a lifelong love and interest in wildlife.
Ben had started a voluntary group called On the Verge Cambridge in 2019, supporting pollinator-friendly planting and biodiversity. But once he realised the extent of pesticide use in his area, he came aboard to battle this side of the issue as well.
Pesticides are having a catastrophic impact on invertebrate numbers, which includes insects. This all has a knock-on effect on bird numbers and mammal numbers. They're all affected by this. If you look at the regular State of Nature reports that come out for the UK, each one is worse than the last, and this is one of the reasons why. So I've been working on two sides. I think they're the same coin, really. You know, addressing biodiversity in a very positive way, in one sense, but actually, without tackling pesticide use generally, the problem won't get solved.
Pesticides comprise a variety of substances, which can further be divided into herbicides and insecticides. Herbicides are used to kill plants in places they're not wanted, and until recently, their effects were a common sight on the land managed by Cambridge City Council.
So they were a major user of herbicides twice a year on the verges, on the roads that they manage on behalf of Cambridgeshire County Council. Some years ago, they actually phased out herbicide use in parks and open spaces, but they continue to use them on roads and verges and pavements and so on.
Working with opposition councillors, Pesticide Free Cambridge were involved in putting a motion to the council to phase out herbicides in the whole city. That motion was passed earlier this year.
That is, we think, a major milestone of ours. And what we're talking about there is our work to make Cambridge City Council's management of the city herbicide free. So they've really got on board now. This is something we're really proud of. We don't think it would have happened had we not really pushed for it.
But Julia told me that for them, this success is merely a jumping off point for achieving a number of goals that go even further.
There's also herbicides used by a large number of other stakeholders across Cambridge, principally in the university, probably the biggest stakeholder in Cambridge, its constituent colleges, schools, businesses, but also principally residents.
And aside from the plant-killing herbicides, there are the wildlife-killing insecticides, whose knock-on effects all the way up the food chain are even more immediate, and which come with their own range of concerns for public health.
We've got two kind of national campaigns. One is to tackle the use of insecticidal powders on private land, and this is something that's very common in the Cambridge colleges, across schools, but also on private gardens, very much around the built environment, largely because of the exquisite toxicity of active ingredients, but also the volatility of the powdered carrier, which comes with some very particular barriers for public health, but also those who are affected by active ingredients. So there are some disability access issues there. They're also extremely harmful to cats, pets, non-target wildlife, birds. Recent studies just come out on the impact of pyrethroids on bird populations.
In their efforts to extend their success so far into the land managed by the university colleges, Ben and Julie have organised several roundtable meetings with college staff to discuss their current pesticide schemes and possible ways to make them more nature and wildlife friendly.
By and large, it's been the gardening staff that have come along, head gardeners, and some of them, they're completely on the ball and they phased out pesticides in their domain. And they've set up, you know, hedgehog-friendly colleges. And yet at the same time, they say they know that the estates side of the colleges are using toxic pesticides, you know, insecticides, ant powder and so on. So, you know, as soon as the green space ends and the built environment begins, it's suddenly a hedgehog-hostile environment. So it's not joined up. It's not joined up at all, really.
More from that interview later. One college whose sustainability scheme already includes the fact that gardening staff use no pesticidal or fungicidal chemicals is Christ's. But even then, some have found a way in which even more can be done to liven up the college's green spaces. Yusuf Hamid Court, at the northern end of Christ College, is the newest addition to the Christ grounds. It was completed in 2023, and this included some new lawn areas in front of the building, made of rolled-out turf. Plans are now being made to make the area more lively and hospitable to college inhabitants. I went there to meet Green Officer of the Christ MCR, Aramish Fatima, who's played an important role in getting the ball rolling on these changes. I started by asking Aramish to describe what the new lawn looks like at the moment.
It's a complete monoculture of grass that is very hard to maintain because it requires a lot of water. The edges are metal and they get really hot during the summer, so it requires even more water, more intense looking after. In the original plan, was supposed to be landscaped and have like places to sit and like not as sterile as it looks right now. Like the benches facing this like really sterile building was one of the, I was like, I've never sat on this bench. It's only been like the past year that the gardeners have taken over and they've been maintaining it, but it's very time and resource intensive to maintain just this patch of grass.
Aramish heads a Society of Christ student volunteers who meet weekly to help the gardening staff with whatever duties the season requires. It was there that they got talking about what could be done to improve the new lawn.
It kind of came around as us like having a chat with the gardeners and then going to the gardening committee. I didn't propose any ideas initially because I really wanted to ask what the students wanted beforehand. So I proposed that we do like a survey and ask what the students want. And the ideas that I proposed were like all over because I asked the head gardener what we could do and couldn't do. And they were like, it's wide open. It's all out there.
That survey has since been presented to the College Garden Committee, among which sit both academic and gardening staff. The two most popular options students supported were a wildflower meadow to create a more biodiverse plant and animal environment, and what was called a Victorian-style garden, a more landscaped option, combining those colourful wildflower elements with paths and seating for students to spend time in, working or relaxing. Here's Aramish again.
My first idea was to take the backs off those benches, because, like, why are we sitting looking at the building? I was talking to the head gardener about drawing up some ideas of what all of these elements together would potentially look like. And there are a few ideas, and they're going to be presented to the gardening committee and the planning committee in, I think, the next couple of months. So there is a sketch, there is a plan.
And in terms of when we're going to see the redesigned lawn, it looks like the plan is going to start taking shape very soon.
Well, I think they want to be done with by next summer, so I think that's the timeline I've been told.
Well, we look forward to finding out how that lawn project ends up developing, and we'll make sure to pop back once those changes start being seen. Now, back to my conversation with Julia and Ben from Pesticide Free Cambridge, where the one topic that kept coming up was transparency.
The second kind of national campaign that we're really focusing our efforts on is trying to tackle the general invisibility of pesticides in biodiversity policy and trying to correct that.
I put to them one development which has been promoted as a major success in Cambridge biodiversity. The King's College wildflower meadow first flowered in 2020, resulting in what the college calls a stunning conversion of the college's back lawn into a colourful wildflower meadow, carpeted in poppies, cornflowers and oxeye daisies, stretching from the chapel to the cam. In a biodiversity survey led by King's own botany fellow Cicely Marshall, they found that plant species biodiversity almost trebled in just the first year of the project, with 59 species recorded, including some critically endangered wildflowers native to the UK, such as wild candytuft and the cornflower. In terms of insect species, King's botanists identified 13 species of pollinators on just one summer afternoon, 130 different insect species in total, and again that's a marked increase compared to the other grass lawns and includes some species that have become very rare nationally. The folks at Pesticide Free Cambridge had a lot of good things to say about King's wildflower meadow, whose seeds are regularly harvested and shared with other colleges, spawning similar projects, for example, at Jesus and Trinity, but Julie also had this to say about the scientific publication surveying King's lawns.
Measuring the impacts of the wildflower meadow, which of course are fantastic as you've outlined, but of course what gets lost in the small print and which is mentioned in this paper is that 60% of the estate of King's College is still managed through conventional chemical means. Some of these chemicals are just absolutely devastating for biodiversity. Selective herbicides that are used, for example, on most college lawns are designed to kill clover and dandelions and daisies, which of course are essential for the insects that we want to protect.
I put Julia's concerns to King's College, who got back to me with the following statement.
King's College is committed to sustainable and environmentally responsible grounds management. We do not use pesticides or fungicides on our lawns. On occasion, when weed species begin to dominate and compromise the integrity of the turf, we apply a selective herbicide. Wherever possible, we prioritise spot treatments over broader applications to minimise environmental impact. Our approach seeks to balance high standards of turf quality with a significant reduction in chemical use. As part of this commitment, we now accept a greater diversity of weed species within our lawns than in previous years. When fertilisation is required, we use only organic, granular products derived from composted chicken manure and algae, supporting both soil health and ecological sustainability.
Back at Christ's, Aramish also told me about some of the toils she's had to deal with, volunteering with the gardeners in her college's pesticide-free areas.
The garden requires so much weeding because we don't use any chemicals. Just having other student volunteers that we just go help them out and just kind of seeing the amount of work that is being put. They could just like spray it down and that'd be one of the solutions, but they're really committed to like keeping that. And it also makes so many things that grow throughout the college actually edible. Like I go pick wild garlic all the time. I go to the tea garden and nothing in there has any pesticides or anything, but that also means like we've been dealing with so much pests just like being around. We got a intense ladybird infestation that like ate all of our time, which was not great, but I was like, okay, it'll come back, and I think it is coming back. Yeah,
and we'll be hearing more about that student-run organic tea garden in our episode all about sustainable food practices in Cambridge. And aside from volunteering with staff to support the work that goes into pesticide-free gardening, I asked Julia and Ben what their advice would be for students looking to get involved.
So if students want to, say, get a campaign going in their college, we'd love to hear from them. We can share our materials, get them up to speed with the issues. And I think what is very obvious from our discussions, not just with colleges, but other organisations and stakeholders around Cambridge, is that very few people actually are aware that Cambridge City Council have gone herbicide free. The visual difference is absolutely staggering.
We also participate in events. So we'll be at the River Rights event on the 21st of June on Jesus Green. And we give talks. We've given a number of talks over the years to various societies, including the Cambridge Climate Society at University of Cambridge several times.
The City Council's move away from herbicide-based weed management started with a push from pesticide-free Cambridge for greater transparency, bringing the issue into public consciousness. And soon after officials started publishing where and when they would be spraying, pressure to rethink the chemical approach started to build.
What we want to see is full transparency of what is being used. So if, you know, a college, number one, they've just sprayed pyrethroids all over the place, or put ant powder down, or put, you know, selective herbicide over their lawn, there should be a big sign there, yeah, for public health, but also just for full transparency that that is what they're using. Yeah, it should be on their website and on their biodiversity page. Yes, we're doing these wonderful things. Unfortunately, we still use pesticides. This is what we use. And I think, you know, that that's one thing that students, it's a very easy thing that students can push for. We want a sign up. If you're spraying these things, we want to know about it. And it's a very bad look.
It was very, very tough to begin with. And we could have been forgiven for giving up and thinking this is impossible, but clearly we didn't. And we've talked about, you know, the other drivers of, for instance, biodiversity loss. This is something that is difficult, but not insurmountable. So, and there are many other hurdles we've got, but it is possible to make a change. And the change will be extremely positive for public health, for disability access, and for biodiversity. It can be done.
A really interesting, powerful thought bringing to a close that episode of Green Cambridge from our head of news, Jerry Schmidt. You'll be able to catch the next episodes of Green Cambridge here in the CamFM trending feed over the coming weeks, or on CamFM News Brunch between 11 and 12 on Sunday mornings. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to find more programmes, you can look back through the CamFM trending feed and find our archive interviews and features, or head on over to camfm.co.uk, where there's hundreds of shows from talented Cambridge and ARU students waiting for your listening pleasure. Rating this podcast or subscribing to it always helps a lot as well, so that's really appreciated if you'd like to do that. But otherwise, all that remains to be said for now is hope you have a lovely day and come back soon. CamFM.